welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 483. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
And Dan Sullivan.
Hello.
You may have noticed, if you're a regular listener, that we weren't here last week. Apologies for that. That's mostly my fault. We have a bank holiday weekend here in the UK, so it was a Friday off, and I was panicking about flights that were maybe being cancelled beforehand. So there was a bit of prep going on there, which meant we just didn't have the time in the end. So sorry, my bad, but we're back, and that means we can cover a bunch of stuff from the past 2 weeks. Did you have fun over your four-day weekends, folks? What did we do? Did we go and do exciting things? Banging! Oh, I can't believe I didn't come and hang out with you guys.
I think I slept.
Actually, that's very good.
Which is massively underrated, sleeping.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I went on a plane and didn't sleep much, but I'm starting to think, while the trip was nice, sleep does sound good.
I can't remember for the life of me what I did, but I saw Endgame 2 nights ago, so I'm still buzzing from that.
Don't you say a word, boy. I've got it tomorrow, and I've just been constantly adding new words to my Twitter filter because even, like, I thought I'd covered everything, and then something pops up in your feed, and it's because they've spelled Endgame wrong.
I was going to say, that's the biggest, culprit I've seen when people misspell everything, and you're just like, oh, god damn it.
It's like, not only are you ruining it for everyone, you're also an idiot! But I've managed to avoid anything so far. I'm doing it tomorrow. Are you on the Avengers train, Dan, or are you just not?
No, I'm massively, massively out of the loop with this. I watched the original Iron Man, and then I think I've seen the second Captain America film.
Wow.
So I know some of the characters.
Yeah, you've got a little bit of catching up, though, I'd say.
That's it, yeah. I've got a cat called Loki. This is about it, yeah.
What does it all look like from the outside? Because speaking as someone who occasionally stands to the side of things, like, for example, I did the first season of Lost, which I enjoyed, watched the first episode of the second season of Lost, and went, this is going to be balls, isn't it? You don't know where you're going. And then I just tapped out. And then I spent the next, 6 years watching everyone else losing their minds and getting progressively more annoyed with the fact that everyone seemed to realise it was crap.
It does seem a bit odd. And as somebody on kind of the outside of comics as well, it's kind of like, I feel like there's, what, 3 or 4 movies being added to this every year?
Every year, yeah.
It definitely 3 years feels like,
is the average, yeah.
And it's just hard to keep track of. Also, they seem to be killing people off. I know that's especially happening at the moment. And I remember the last run of the superhero movies as well. So it's always, it's odd that there's all of these kind of relaunches going on. It's nice that they're getting to other characters, though.
Yeah, the smaller characters turn out to be the winners. That was the thing with Guardians of the Galaxy. When that was announced, everyone was like, what? Who? This little kind of quirky, weird one from the 70s or 80s that no one cared about. And then it made more money than the rest of them.
So They're
going to be scraping the barrel now, though, after all the big ones.
They'll reboot it again. That's what they'll do.
God,
it's phase 4.
I can't do this again.
DC haven't managed to pull it off yet, have they? They're still trying to do their own, or they were trying to do their own thing.
They've given up on
it. It's been a bit of a mixed bag, hasn't it, for DC? I enjoyed Wonder Woman, and Batman v Superman, I thought, had its moments. But apart from that, it's been very up and down.
And Universal were trying to do one for a while. They relaunched The Mummy, didn't they? They were going to do
that. Was the sad thing, yeah.
Because the Dark Universe.
They pitched this idea ages ago. Universal, originally, Guillermo del Toro was going to do it. Hi, by the way. Welcome to the movie podcast. Guillermo del Toro was going to, do his remake. He was going to do The Creature from the Black Lagoon. He was going to shepherd the Dark Universe through, kind of sit at the head of it all. And it was like, Guillermo's perfect for that. That's the thing to do. And then he didn't do it. And then they cast it all. And then they made that god-awful Tom Cruise Mummy movie, which is only notable for that superb trailer that they accidentally released, the work print version of the audio, where it didn't have any music and all it had was the isolated vocal sound effects of Tom Cruise screaming. It's a really good watch and an interesting insight into how audio production works, because it's like, this is what it sounds like when you just have Tom Cruise going isolated on its own, and it's a good watch. I highly recommend it. Games, that's it. That's what we do here. So we've got a fortnight of news to catch up on, including stuff from Epic about Crunch, which has re-emerged, unfortunately, again. The chatter is back in the industry, and as usual, it's not particularly good. We've got good news from Nintendo and their mobile plans, plus the beta for an upcoming mobile game from them that you definitely, definitely want to get involved with if you possibly can. Plus, we have a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Rumble Stars Soccer. We've got Bombastic Brothers, The Video Kid, Pigeon Wings Strike, and more. But first, the news. So we'll chat money matters very briefly here. Nintendo's mobile division has released some information and stats. We're not going to go into them too deeply, but basically 7% year-over-year increase to 46 billion yen, which is the equivalent of about $412 million in 2019, the financial year of that. Basically, Nintendo's mobile division, i.e. any of the stuff they've done so far with Dragalia Lost being the big new one that they released, or Super Mario Run, all of that stuff, it's doing well, and it's doing well, more well, every year.
Yeah, it's good news across the board for them.
It was something of a gamble, I suppose, bringing that stuff to mobile, and they toyed it around with it for ages, right up until the point where they said, we're never going to do it, and then they did it, and basically it's making loads of money for them, which, I mean, it's not a surprise, really. They release Mario on any platform, people are going to go ahead and buy it, but stuff like Dragalia Lost doing really well for them is interesting, because that was their entirely new IP that doesn't exist on a previous platform. They're not capitalizing on an existing IP brand loyalty thing there. That was a new game, and that appears to be doing all right as well.
Yeah, they've done really well with that. I'm quite impressed. I wasn't really expecting them. I really thought that they'd be banking on existing IPs, considering they've got hundreds of them now. But no, it's got a really cool art style. I've not played it yet, but I know that they've got an upcoming Fire Emblem crossover, and I'm a sucker for anything Fire Emblem, so I'll probably end up downloading it and talking about it next week. But yeah.
Did you have a bash at the Fire Emblem mobile game? Have you gone there yet?
I really enjoyed that.
It's not bad, is it?
I thought that they managed to really kind of distill it down into these kind of like 15-minute tops matches. The gacha system was a bit weird, but it was a cool idea.
It's pretty addictive, to be fair. I spent a good couple of months on it, and there's quite a bit to it, and I think it seems to be very popular because it continues to make hand over fist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's doing well. This also extends the good news to the Nintendo Switch. So we're up to basically 17 million units over the last fiscal year again, and that's up 12%. So not only did it do incredibly well out the gate, it continues to sell more and more as time passes. And this is ahead of the console refreshes that we're going to get. It's kind of been confirmed now. We heard rumors early on about a new, more pimp version of it, i.e. a higher spec version of the Switch, and also a budget model. Now that's been pretty much confirmed, I think.
Yeah, it's expected for June, I think. That's the rumor going around now. But no announcements expected at E3.
Okay. So, yeah, they're doing very, very well on every possible metric, which, you know, is a win for them because of the Wii U doing what it did, or rather what it didn't.
Yeah.
And is largely now considered as a flop, like officially, that's what people called it. So they have bounced back with aplomb. And mobile is a big part of that. And if you do happen to have your mobile phone device handy, specifically an Android device, and you live in the States, you might be able to get into the closed beta for Mario Kart Tour, which is going to be happening, the beta, next month. I think 22nd it's scheduled for.
That's right.
And if you go on to either pg.com or pgbiz, we've got a link which will take you to the site which you can sign up for. Now, it's going to be a closed beta, which means it has to be invite only. So you stick your email in there and then cross your fingers. And it's only lasting for a weekend, I think, just a couple of days.
I think it's until June the 4th.
Oh, all right then, make that a couple of weeks. But yeah, that's something that you can jump on board with. I'm frustrated because it's not open to people in the UK, and it's Android only. And I'm not sure my Xiaomi... Whenever I've tried to sign up for like closed betas with my little Redmi Note, it tends to go, your device isn't compatible. And I don't know if that's because of its stats, or I don't know, they just don't have it on the list of things that they accept. But this is probably my most anticipated game, because all the things they can do to Zelda, the Zelda game that will appear, that's much more grey for me. Like, there are so many different directions they could go with a Zelda game, whether they keep it as a kind of like, they'll make it a third person adventure, or make it a top down retro game, or we'll turn it into a little puzzle, or yada, yada, yada. with Mario Kart Tour, it's gonna be a Mario Kart looking racer in it. That's what it's gonna be. Racing is perfectly suited because it's like, by its very nature, like 3 minutes, 4 minute bursts of gameplay, perfect for mobile. And it's also just one of the funnest games that you can play on quick bursts and with other people. And if it's a multiplayer component, I just think this is the one that could be the game that I will spend the most time of Nintendo's best offering for me. Are we all psyched for Tour?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm really interested to see Nintendo's spin on it. Because obviously with the likes of Animal Crossing, it was a bit watered down. Same with Super Mario Run to some extent, even though, you know, you had quite a lot of levels and all that. What is going to be their take for the mobile version of Mario Kart Tour? I mean, is it just going to be, I don't know, smaller racetracks? Is there only going to be a handful of them? Is there going to be something where you're actually on the go and it actually affects it, like Pokemon Go? I have no idea what.
You mean like a geolocation component to it?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know.
Yeah. I suppose there are more options than maybe I'd said, but they're going to have to work very hard to screw this up. Even if they just ported over, there'd no work. They're just like, oh, here's Mario Kart, and we've tweaked the controls. That would be amazing. Even if it was the SNES version, like, ooh, they just put that on there, and went, there you go. I would be delighted.
I'd settle for Double Dash 2. That'd be fine.
But that would really, really work for me because that's the one that's going to be, I guess, baited first. But there is another game due to come this year, which is Dr. Mario World.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think they're both supposed to hit in summer.
Yeah. All we know about that one is it's going to be summer. It's going to be free to play. That's kind of it. But the people that they're working with is the guys who did Tsum-Tsum, Disney Tsum-Tsum. Do you remember that game?
I remember the game. I couldn't tell you if they're working with them or not.
Mm. They were working with DNA for the longest time. That's right. The people that they made like Fire Emblem Heroes and Animal Crossing with. But they've paired up with a couple of other people. And say Line Corporation and NHN Entertainment are the ones they're doing for Dr. Mario World Mobile. Okay. So this is going to be a different team making the game. So I'm very curious to see what they come up with and how they factor the Dr. Mario MD world into their mobile universe.
Absolutely. What about you, Dan? Is Mario Kart or Dr. Mario on mobile any interest to you?
Definitely want to see how Mario Kart handles. I've thoroughly enjoyed Mario Kart throughout the ages. Dr. Mario, do we know even what type of game it'll be? Weren't they largely puzzlers?
Yeah. I mean, I assume puzzle stuff, but it just says free to play.
I mean, a puzzler fits really well with the mobile core, I suppose. Mm. So it could be interesting. I hope that they do more than a kind of match-free or Tetris-style game.
That's what pops into my head, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I see Puzzler and I think Dr. Mario, and I think it did have a kind of columns Tetris-y stage in it,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah.
See, that's what I mean. With Dr. Mario, I can see them playing it quite safe and going this simple puzzler route, whereas opposed to with Mario Kart, I can see them being quite experimental.
See, I thought that one of the IPs they haven't mentioned yet, I don't know if it's a first-party IP or not, but Nintendogs, that was very big on the 3DS, and that seems like a no-brainer for mobile, having the virtual pet thing. But I've got no idea whether that's a first-party thing or
I'm not. Sure it's first-party, yeah.
It was first-party,
they all established it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why they haven't returned to it since, actually, to be honest, because there's a lot of people who still talk about it.
I was going to say, there was a game on Switch that came out, I believe, in the last 6 months that was like, I don't know, My Animals and Me or something. Something like that. Some terrible name. Okay. And it was essentially Nintendogs, just without the label.
But yeah, go and check out both of the sites and you can get access, possibly, if you're in the States, to that Mario Kart Tour. And I will sit here in the UK just like shaking my fist across the Atlantic at you. You bastards. On to slightly grimmer news, but we're going to mention it because it keeps popping up again and again, and it's not going away. And until it goes away, we're going to keep talking about it, which is the problem of crunch in the games industry. The most recent culprit of this, I suppose, is Epic. So some workers have been talking to the press, specifically an article in Polygon, which you can go and check out, where they're talking about their staff. This is both in-house and contract work. Have been working as much as 70 hours a week, sometimes up to 100, in the quest to like update a gun in a game in time to appease the shareholders, which seems a weird waste of human life. The problem with this one is, I guess, in the wording of their policy. So technically, one of the things that Epic does is it gives unlimited time off.
Mm.
So you can take time off pretty much whenever you want if you work with Epic. But the problem is that puts the onus on you to go like, okay, I'm taking a week off or a day off here and there. And you're sort of stuck with the knowledge that if you do that, cool, but you're sort of screwing everyone else in the team by making their workload much worse. So people within the company have described this policy, and it's like, they say it gives us an unlimited time off. This is a quote, but it's almost impossible to take the time because if I take the time off, the workload falls on other people and no one wants to be that guy. And that's one of these things where the idea of you're kind of weaponizing, I guess, your staff relationships against the staff a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas when you give someone actual time off and say, look, you have, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks holiday or whatever it is a year, you have to take it. That's actually a useful thing because it's like, well, A, it gives me the chance to escape, but also the company mandate is like, no, you need to take this. It is essential that you take this. So you don't feel the guilt. You don't feel like you're letting the company down.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation. I mean, especially when you're in that workplace, as you're saying, when you're working alongside colleagues and everyone, you don't want to be that guy that, you know, leaves everyone out to dry. But in the other manner, you've got to look at your health, stuff like that. I mean, it's when companies aren't taking employees' health into account and everything like that, it's just not good. It's an account that's coming up time and time again that we're seeing in the industry, and it just needs to improve. I mean, it's funny, obviously, seeing this thing about Epic and Fortnite, and interestingly, the Respawn CEO came out this week saying we're actually just sticking to seasonal updates to give the devs more time and, you know, actually have some time off. So,
and I suppose we all work extra hours. Like, we work, you know, in the industry that we work in, and that often involves, like, stuff popping up at random. And, you know, we work from home, a lot of us. So it's like you just kind of work in weird hours and you work till it's finished.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And it can be very difficult to regulate your own hours, either if you're self-employed or if you're not working within an office. Whereas if you do walk into an office and you do a 9 to 5 or something, then there is this ability to kind of write, I leave the building now. And even if I'm still getting emails, I'm not near the computer where I have all the assets. I can't do anything. The day is over. Whereas when you work from your phone or when you work from your home computer, it's like, I could be working right now. Any moment of the day, I could be in that room working right now. So you have to create this sort of, no, I must block myself off, because it isn't healthy to pull this kind of stuff.
No.
And in the games industry, I think, capitalizes on people's enthusiasm and passion more than anything else, because a lot of people are very keen to work within the industry because they have a great love for games and gaming. And there's that sense that, well, like, if you don't want to do it, we've got 1,000 other people who'll do it, probably for cheaper than you. And they're all like 16, 17 years old. They don't mind being exploited.
Yeah, it's just the wrong mentality. Considering, you know, Fortnite has brought in billions of dollars worldwide, I think that, you know, it needs to be addressed more. I think, obviously, us bringing this up on the podcast, outlets covering it more, it will make a difference eventually. And the whole point of it, you know, the more we talk about it, hopefully, the more difference it will make.
Yeah, it's a very small thing we're doing ultimately. But you mentioned the money, because obviously the Polygon article itself has got a lot of information in it. But Alex Calvin over on PC Games Insider, our guy, wrote up as well and points out that basically Tim Sweeney, the guy running it all, you know, is worth at this point $7.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And Fortnite makes, you know, an astonishing amount of money every month. And it's like, you could probably hire a couple more staff members, probably, like, to take the edge off if people are really suffering this bad, or deal with the whole crunch problem, which is that everyone accepts that there's this period at the end of the game before it goes gold, where it's like, right, we're going to be doing a month, 2 months of 75-hour weeks, and everyone has to get on board, or you're not getting your... Well, the Rockstar one was like, you're not getting your name in the credits of the game.
Yeah.
I remember that's
ridiculous, yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's... Like, if you're not there when the game goes gold, if you leave, even if you've worked on it for 5 years, if you leave the day before, you're not getting in the credits. And it's like, ooh, this doesn't sound good at all.
It's a case of bad management, basically, and bad prioritizing and bad scheduling. So what we're seeing more so with these cases of crunch, naturally, we do get the big discussion, like the Rockstar one, for instance. They're these big grand games, and yeah, they've set this big targeted release date, so everything needs to be in place, and they're setting this release date internally years before it's going to come out. So they've got years that they should be planning this workload. They should be bringing on more contractors early on. There are so many people out there who have worked in the games industry now who are doing contract work. You could have people come in as fixers, but the industry just doesn't have this at the moment in games development. We don't have people out there who are like 20-year veterans who are like, if you need someone to come in and smash the hell out of stuff for the last 3 months, pay me this much, no negotiation, I'm in, we'll sort your problems. They don't have this, there's not really this big culture of fixers yet, which we have in a lot of other businesses. There's a lot of parallels between this crunch and games retail was the same thing, or a lot of retail, like music retail, where you're bringing in people who, as you said, are young and enthusiastic, and you're using that enthusiasm to work them a bit harder. And you're guilting them into performing to these kind of KPIs and these targets and these release dates and these schedules. And so many extra hours are simply demanded and expected, that if you don't meet this expectation, then you're seen as letting the team down. And that's what keeps you going. And it's only when you stop afterwards and you go, yeah, actually, there was an extra 5 hours here, an extra 5 hours there. And it becomes this awful thing that's dominated your life. But what this Epic thing is about how that crunch transfers over to live products, to games as a service, because they've got updates coming out every week or every month. And so for many of these team members that are used to doing a little bit of kind of like crisis work, a little bit of extra hours here and there, because they care about it and because it's generally part of the job and they hope that doing that will make it easier in future, these people aren't getting any rest. You know, this week we're adding a new gun. Next week we're going to be working on tweaking the balance, blah, blah, blah. And it might shift between teams, but yeah, there's no structure. There's no real ownership from the management. They just say what they expect.
And that live service stuff, that was something that was the exception rather than the rule back in the day. It's like if you worked on an MMO, for example, that's built into the core of the game. And so you're running a live service. But now every game almost has a live service component where they're constantly adding stuff. And then when that stuff inevitably breaks, they've discussed this in the article as well, people need to react to it immediately, and they're not willing to just, for example, well, if this gun isn't working properly and needs balancing, we'll get rid of the gun, we'll take it out, fix it, and then put it back in. They're like, no, it's got to be fixed now. It's broken, we're leaving it in, fix it. And that's the problem, where it's like, who's going to do this?
And these companies are building their business around a, say, 40-hour work week, but they're not building these kind of crisis out-of-hours teams, like, say, an IT support team would have, or like a medical team, for instance. They're built for this 24-hour system, but most of these companies are still working the same way as they did 10, 15 years ago, which just isn't acceptable or modern.
No, without companies really adapting to today's standards, the only logical situation I can see going forward is for game developers to unionize.
Yeah.
And we're back to that again, yeah. So this has been a chat that's been circulating for about the last half a year or so, and it's only going to keep coming up. So we will keep an eye on it. I think Epic have responded in saying that, all of this stuff, 100-hour work weeks are incredibly rare, and we seek to immediately remedy them to avoid recurrence, is what they've said. But I think more and more people are going to have to look at this, because it just keeps rearing its head, and as long as we keep shining lights on it and stuff, perhaps structurally things will be made a little bit better for everybody. Out and about this week, we have the latest game from Badlands creator Frogmind, although instead of you controlling a little black ball of stuff which is flying through tunnels and avoiding saws, you're smashing around a football with a bunch of animals in Rumble Stars. Now, Rumble Stars Football, if you're in Europe, Rumble Stars Soccer, if you're anywhere else in the world. I think that's how they've titled it on the app stores.
Yeah.
This is ostensibly kind of like a five-a-side-ish looking football game where you have one keeper. It's a portrait played, so it looks a little bit like Clash Royale when you open it up. And weirdly enough, it kind of plays like it. This is a weird one, I think. You've all played this, right?
Yeah.
So rather than you putting players out in the field and controlling them like you would do in a normal football game, it follows that Clash Royale template of a charging bar of mana at the bottom of the screen, and you have four different characters which you can propel onto the pitch once the mana's charged enough to summon them. The keeper's always in the bottom of the screen, you know, guarding the kit. They're all animals, by the way, and they all have different skills and powers. So some of them might be animals that only focus on the ball, are really fast, and as soon as they get it, they take a shot. Some of them might be there's a bull which just ignores the ball completely and goes charging towards your enemy's characters and just basically muscles into them. All your characters have energy bars, so they can be killed and taken off the pitch if they're kind of smashed up enough. There's a wolf character, which is basically a sniper or a guy who shoots from midfield. So as soon as he gets the ball, he turns around, shakes a little bit in anticipation, building up, and then poof, pops a shot off at goal. So it's up to you to choose which one of these characters is best to fling out at any given moment. They've also got cannons, because why not, apparently.
My favourite animal.
The best creature of all.
Yeah.
And so you get to accumulate this team. And of course, as you win more matches, you level up through leagues, you unlock cards from chests that you win at the end of matches. That gives you access to more characters and, you know, build up different teams, yada, yada, yada. Structurally, very, very similar to Clash Royale. The difference, when you put it into a football context, for me, is the random nature of it all. Mm. It feels so chaotic. I don't know how you guys found it.
Yeah, you know, the random nature of it and everything reminds me completely of Mario Strikers. I don't know if you've ever played them games.
No, I never played that.
Yeah, quite enjoyed Strikers, yeah.
Yeah, so like all the abilities and everything all the animals have completely remind me of all, you know, the Nintendo characters when, say, Mario has like a firepower and Wario had like flatulence and stuff like that. It's all a bit crazy like that. But I don't know, what did you think, Dan?
I've actually been really enjoying it. It is a bit chaotic, yeah. But after a while, you start to kind of learn your pairings. And I've definitely, because I've been playing this a lot, I'm not going to lie. When you lot started talking about it in the Slack, I just went and downloaded it and then played it for far longer than it wants you to, which is something I want to talk about. But
yeah, you hit the wall, did you?
Yeah, so you've got 8 characters on your team and you start to kind of learn which ones work well together. So, for instance, there's a little dog that goes and fetches the ball and passes it, but it'll never try and strike. But if you can then get the frog character, which snatches the ball up the front, or you can get the panda up the front, then that's normally all the offense you need, a midfield and a striker. And you stop using other characters, or you learn how to use certain ones. But then it slows down when you start getting into the game. So it's always kind of chaotic when you're playing the matches. But the metagame's really slow. And I didn't think this was going to be the case. But you can only have 4 of the little chests down the bottom.
Yeah.
And those chests are based on which pitch you're playing in. So I'm now onto the second or third pitch, I guess. Mm-hmm. Onto El Dorado. But because it gave me one of the super rare chests, which I thought, amazing, this is great. It was like the second most rare chest, which was amazing luck, but it took 24 hours to unlock. Because of that, I've still got down the bottom of my screen free from the original pitch. And so from that, I'm only going to get boosters for the starting 10 of the characters, whereas I want to be unlocking more characters. So I've got to wait for these chests to unlock. And I'm not going to, obviously, pay, but I guess that's what they want you to do. But it just feels like 4 spaces for the chests to unlock, and restricting the characters by the map really slows down the metagame.
They fill up so quickly. That was the thing. Like within about like 20-30 minutes of playing, like all my chests were filled up at the bottom.
That's it. Right? Yep. And you have to put it down for 2.5 hours if you want to build your team. Otherwise you can keep playing with the same setup you've currently got, but the team doesn't grow or level up, because that's all done through the chests.
Mm. No, I liked the slight chaos of it, because the instinct with football games is to control one of the players and then pass and then take control of that next player. Whereas this is, you're pinging them out and then you're watching them go for it. And it's like, placement is the key, but even then, like, you can place something perfectly and another character will just run into your character, smash him out of the way. And then it's just this big bundle that you're kind of observing while your man charges. So there's quite a nice, like almost spectator's aspect to it as well that I kind of enjoyed. You're always kind of tactically planning and trying to get the characters out there to do the right thing. But the rest of it is just, it's kind of funny to watch these animals like scrum over the ball. And
yeah,
there are five second periods where you're just like, I wonder what's going to happen here. And that's quite nice. And then when you do score, it's kind of fun. It does play that music every time and it's slightly annoying. Got a bit sick of that goal scoring music, not going to lie. But the actual thing itself was surprisingly fun. And even though on the surface you look at it and go, oh, it's a Clash Royale clone, it feels very different to Clash Royale.
It does, and controls-wise, I found it very easy to pick up as well.
Yeah, because you're kind of catapulting the characters out in an Angry Birds style pull back and release. And yeah, I think this is actually quite cool. I'm not surprised, really, because Frogmind are good. Badlands is very good. I thought that their sort of side-on Clash Royale thing, the name of which currently escapes me, was also really good. Badland Brawl, that's it. That was really good. And I don't know if that's gotten the love that it deserves. I thought it was great. So this is officially out now. It's been in soft launch for ages. Free to download, Android and iOS. Rumble Stars something. Soccer, football, wherever you are. Go and check that out, definitely.
I just want to say I got to speak to the CEO of Frogmind this week. So there's an interview up speaking with them about Rumble Stars and the development and all that. So that's worth a read.
Oh, nice. I will totally read that. That sounds awesome. Okay, what else have we got on... Actually, just pop over to Switch for just a moment. Who reviewed Cuphead?
That was me.
That was you. How did you find it on the Switch? This is the port that they released, I think, last week.
That's right, yes. So it released globally for the Switch last week. I loved it, yeah. It's as cruel and glorious as anybody that's played Cuphead will remember. There's three worlds and then, like, the finale boss.
Mm-hmm.
I played probably about two-thirds of it on Xbox originally when it came out, and then for obviously the review, I played it start to finish, and I loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it. The repeat and learn mechanics of it all is really rewarding. Learning the rhythm of all the bosses and everything, learning how, you know, when to jump at the right time, what moves they're about to use, if you can get over the difficulty factor. There was only a couple of little issues I had. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5 or 4.5 stars out of 5 on our rating, which is gold. I struggled with the loading a little bit. That was the only difference coming off the Xbox version. So, going in and out of a battle, it took between anywhere 10 to 15 seconds. Possibly I had a couple of instances where it took a bit longer loading in first time. You've got this little animated, like, minute jar. Not, what is it, a minute...
Hourglass.
Hourglass, thank you. Yes, in the bottom corner, that's, like, dancing around and flipping. When you're loading, the hourglass just freezes, and it's just like, why did you bother putting this in if it's just going to, like, affect it and, you know, slow down the whole thing?
I'm guessing it didn't take as long to load on Xbox.
That's right, yeah, yeah. That was the difference I noticed. So, but apart from that, fantastic time. It's perfect for Switch. You know, Cuphead wouldn't be amiss in Nintendo's catalogue, you know, lining up with the likes of Mario and whatnot. So absolutely recommend that if you've got that.
Awesome. All right. Back to mobile for a minute. We've got, what else? Bombastic Brothers. Don't know if anyone had a look at this.
No, I've not yet.
Okay, so this is, it's kind of a Contra-ish Metal Slug style game where you take control of a number of different, like, warrior dude characters. You start off on a tropical island and your dog swallows something magical or powerful and then gets whisked away, and so you're chasing after that. But it is a good old-fashioned side-scrolling shooter where you stomp along the floor. You can jump, but you don't need to as often, apart from avoiding, because your weapon does that auto-aim thing where, you know, it'll angle up 45 degrees or angle down depending on where the enemies are, which is what makes it feel like that, you know, that Contra-style shooter. Really, really nice visuals. This is one of the very cartoony-style, beautifully animated, very fluid, very expressive and full of personality. Like that a lot. The shooting itself is sort of fun and satisfying. It doesn't start off too insane. It doesn't go full Metal Slug for a while. But there's a nice selection even early on of alternative weapons. So if you get your initial gun and then eventually unlock a spread shotgun, and that's quite nice. Then you get some grenades and then you get some rockets which fire overhead, and then you can call in an airstrike. And so it keeps adding stuff to your arsenal, which is welcome. Bosses are, again, they feel nice, old-fashioned arcadey 80s bosses where you're watching for their patterns and avoiding their things and then taking the shot in the sensitive spot, and not unlike Cuphead, really, in that regard, where you just learn what they do and learn their pattern, and away you go. So it's everything you've seen before. It's very SNK, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that Metal Slug style. It's free to download, and it's got that free-to-play thing going on where you go back to your ship, and your ship has different rooms which you can unlock in that Fallout Shelter sort of way, a training room to upgrade your characters and, you know, an arsenal and all that business. So you do have to unlock weaponry. You do have to start grinding levels again because you'll reach a boss level and it'll say your power really isn't up to this boss. You need to have 6,500 power, which is like your character's level. And you're only on 5,700, so maybe go back and grind the levels again. So that's where it stops being like a classic arcade game and starts being like a modern mobile shooter. But it's still quite a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's bright and it's noisy and it's good. There is a PvP mode as well. That was sort of the slightly weaker bit because you jump into the fight, but you don't really control them. So you get two teams of three, which will have a fight on this small area, but the game decides who wins based on your stats.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds a bit strange.
Sort of missed opportunity there for actual real-time PvP, which is a shame. But the rest of it, this is a really good, this is a nice sort of strong seven out of 10 for me in terms of picking it up, playing it, immediate fun, good feedback. Bombastic Brothers is the name, and I think this is just iOS at the moment, but it'll probably turn up on Android at some point. So maybe give that one a bit of a look. Sticking with the 80s retro thing, the other side of this coin is the video kit, which I picked up and I immediately despised. Anyone played this?
It's Paperboy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Paperboy, but it's ramming a billion pop culture references down your throat from the moment you open it up. And I just found it massively obnoxious.
So I'm one of those people that didn't watch Ready Player One because I was like, I don't need a Forrest Gump for my generation. And so, yeah, when I heard about the video kid, I was a little bit like, not for me, really.
No, and I have seen Ready Player One and was suitably unimpressed. But
it was fine. It was a seven, as you said.
Spielberg's worst film since always. God no. It's got that Paperboy thing, but it's also got a bit of the classic auto runner where you swipe left and swipe right to avoid oncoming traffic, or you can swipe up and jump on the cars and do a little grind. It's trying to be a skateboarding game. So if you've not played Paperboy, you're basically on a skateboard running down the road and you can tap or swipe to chuck newspapers into newspaper boxes or people's lawns as you drive past. But this one is done in a Minecrafty block style, and everyone walking down the street is some kind of pop culture character, and Paperboy himself is Marty McFly, clearly, from Back to the Future. And it's like, just within seconds of opening it up, it's just that really over-the-top obnoxious, do you remember Big Bird? Do you? Do you remember Inspector Gadget?
like collecting the power glove and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I was just like, nah, mate. I'm fine with a bit of the old nostalgia, but this just... it's just throwing too much at you obnoxiously. And then underneath that, I feel like it's covering up for the fact that the game itself is just a bit flat. And no, it was a no from me. I think we gave it like a very generous 3 stars. But the Video Kid is the name of that one. That's available on everything, iOS, Android, I think Switch as well.
Yeah, it is on everything under the sun.
So yeah, help yourself, but not for me, thank you. We've also got something that was deceptively, I picked it up and went, oh, this is another, you know, auto flyer thing, who cares? Actually really good. Pigeon Wings Strike.
Ah, okay.
You spoke of this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did. Very briefly.
Didn't even oh, good, yeah, because I hadn't played it at that point, and I've actually played it now, or I maybe played a second of it. Really good, like bizarrely good. We got the review up a week ago, John Monday did it, and it keeps changing on you in a way that's really, really pleasing. Basically, you're a pigeon flying in a little airplane from left to right, and you are either tilting the control to move up or down, so you kind of tilt the device, or you can swipe, choose your controls. And then there's a button on the right-hand side of the screen, which is entirely context-based. So sometimes you press it and you're firing if there are enemies around. Sometimes you press it and you give yourself a little boost. So it depends what you're coming up against in the environment, which itself is constantly changing. You're out in the open air, you're then whizzing through tunnels. Suddenly it all goes black. Suddenly it starts raining. The front of your aircraft, a light goes on, and then you're in a tunnel and suddenly you have to react to that. And that's the strength of the game. It's constantly throwing new things at you that you're not expecting and changing the rules of how it works and how you interact with it. And it keeps it really fresh and fun, because initially it just feels like Cannibal with a plane.
Yeah.
But it keeps changing. And I was really like quietly impressed by it. I thought it was dead strong. John Monday loved it, gave it 9 out of 10. There's a video up for this one as well, but I recommend everyone have a go. I think this comes from PC Land, and there was a previous game to it. There was a Pigeon Wings that was very popular, and now we've got the Pigeon Wings Strike being the sequel. So I would say look into this one. I can't remember whether it's free to play. I think it is, but definitely have a look. iOS only at the moment, but yeah, check it out. Anything else anyone else has played
So I got the Smash Brothers DLC, which released last week.
Oh, yeah. Is this Joker?
This is Joker, yes, from okay. Persona 5. So Joker is the first character as part of the Fighter Pass.
There's mm-hmm. five in total, isn't there? Is it
there
five?
There is, yeah. That's yeah. right. So Piranha Plant was released as sort of an early adopters giveaway. And now Joker has been released as part of the Fighter Pass. So it's basically a season pass. Where you get five characters and five stages with some music to accompany that. So Joker arrived alongside the 3.0 update. You got access to Stage Builder, which they brought that back from previous iterations. They also added a video editing tool, but you can't really share on social media, which is frustrating still. You can just edit and then upload to like the Smash World. I think that's what it's called, like Smash World integration, but there's no way to directly
stick it on Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, there's a whole host of costumes as well. So you've got wigs from Persona 3 and 4 and outfits, characters, Morgana and Teddy, and also randomly put in were Tails and Knuckles from Sonic.
Oh, yeah.
You can dress Mii fighters up as any of these characters. I don't know why you'd want to, because nobody really plays as Mii fighters.
So hang on a minute. You're telling me that there's a game where I can punch Tails in the face?
Sort of, yeah, pretty much.
Oh, you've just sold a console.
What's your history with Smash Brothers, Dan? Have you played much? I know you've not really dabbled with it, James, have you?
No.
I've really enjoyed the Smash series, but I've not played this one yet. But I do really like that they've added in the stage editor and the sharing. I know that's caused its fair share of problems. Nintendo were always so slow to adopt online play because of the risk of community and stuff not being family friendly. And they even said that when I asked them, because I went to an event for the Labo VR. Okay. And I kind of said, like, you can make your own VR games in this. This is amazing, even if they're little, like, dioramas that you can interact with. This is amazing. How do you share them? And the guy turned around and went, you can't share them because Nintendo have said, what if people create weird stuff and share it out to people? And I was like, yeah, okay, fair point. You know, I understand why Nintendo have that stance. So when the update, like, released the ability to share stages, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's been flooded with memes and mature images, which I think they're starting to crack down on a little bit. They've started to take a few off, but some of them are fantastic, though, in some respect. Like, lots of them have been taken from, you know, the Simpsons steamed hams. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah. I saw this picture of the stage. Yeah,
yeah, someone's created a full, like, diorama of that, which is amazing. You know, there's, like, stuff like, you know, Sonic on the original Sonic the Hedgehog, where he waggles his finger. Like, someone's created that full emblem, and then you're fighting on that as a stage with his finger, like, wagging. So that's pretty neat. Stuff like that. But then you have some much darker content, which I'd avoid.
It was inevitable, though. The moment you give anyone a digital pen on the internet, they're going to draw a cock and balls, aren't they? I mean, yeah. That's just what people do. Funny, you mentioned the old Sonic and the finger wagging, which makes me think of the Sega on announcement. I read online, I don't know who tweeted this, so I can't credit them, unfortunately, that someone said, hey, you should bring that back. Like, you're doing all this retro stuff. Next time you do a retro game, bring back the Sega. And it's like, yeah, we can't do that because the guy who says Sega has the copyright to say Sega in that way. The vocal artist, apparently, somehow, through some amazing bit of contract wrangling, made it so that no one else is allowed to say Sega other than him.
That's unbelievable.
So they can't do it. They can't bring it back legally, because if they get anyone else in to do it, they'll get sued.
And he can presumably just walk around the street just doing that at random. Yeah.
Well, you would, wouldn't you? Yeah. I mean, like, come on.
Who's going to stop you?
It's complete sidebar, but I thought that was brilliant. So that actually, it's almost a blessing in some ways, because that is a bit of the late 80s, early 90s that has to stay there. They can't repackage it. They can't string, like, endless franchise bullshit out of it or put it in Ready Player One. They're not allowed.
I was going to say, that's why it didn't turn up in the video, kid.
Exactly. I was delighted. What a win. So, good stuff then all around. You approve of it. I was going to be a bitch then and say that, like, Dan, you say, like, oh, I haven't really played this version of Smash Bros. Haven't you, though? Because isn't it always the same game?
Oh, savage.
No,
savage.
Have
I just,
no.
I've played a bit of the earlier ones, but like yeah. as a bystander, it does sort of look like the same game every time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Keep obviously improving on it, and it is essentially the same game, but the mechanics of it are completely different every iteration.
Are they?
Yeah, they are. As someone who's in the competitive scene and does attend competitions from time to time, you do notice the little things.
It's the GameCube one they use in the competitive scene, isn't it?
A little bit. Melee's still around. Melee will never die, but most people are adopting Ultimate.
Because it had the trip mechanic in it.
That was in Brawl. People don't give Brawl enough credit. I love Brawl, but it had its problems. But Joker's a great addition. I'm looking forward to seeing whoever else we're going to get as part of the Fighter Pass. I mean, I've got literally no idea. Nintendo have said, we're going to surprise you. Will we get Master Chief? Will we get Banjo-Kazooie?
There was a code name leaked, wasn't there? I think it was Rook or something.
Was it Ryu, I think, from Dragon Quest or something? I think that was right.
I don't know. But everyone guessed that it was Joker, the second like print leaked or whatever it was.
All right.
Because people found two code names for the first two characters. And so people kind of knew. I know there's an article up from like, I guess a year or maybe more ago on pocketgamer.com where they were like, these are the code names. So we're pretty sure the first one's Joker. Not sure what the second one is. And that was like a year ago. So
yeah, I think Doom Guy was on there as well, which would be a very cool addition. So
why not?
That would be good. Yeah, actually.
So we'll have to just wait and see. I think E3. That's the next time we get. I think they'll do on the day E3. They'll go, look, here's character two. He's out today.
Yeah, the old drop and run. Yeah,
not long now. E3, bloody hell. You're forgetting that's creeping up. Awesome. All right, then. Well, if you are a Smash Bros. Player and now obviously hate me for saying things about it, then you can enjoy the new update if you've got the pass thing. We'll leave it there this week. Thank you all for listening and tuning in. Apologies again for the wee week break, but we will be back again next week, promise, with more mobile gaming news and views. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.